Hey guys, real quick, a word about Austin Pets Alive. I went last week and I did a photo shoot with some of their dogs that are available for adoption to try and help get them adopted. Some other musicians did it too. It was fantastic. But while I was there, I talked to Dr. Ellen Jefferson, and she took me on a tour of the whole facility, and I was really moved by what I saw. And I realized that they need more donations. They need more fostering. They need more adopting. They need more volunteers. So let me tell you a little bit about them. Austin Pets Alive, what do? They've rescued over 6,000 dogs and cats at risk of imminent euthanasia each year. They focus on the bottom 50% of animals historically euthanized at city shelters. They help the Austin Animal Center maintain a live outcome rate of 90% or higher. That's 90% or higher. That's no kill, dude. That's amazing. Working together, we can help maintain Austin's status as the largest no-kill city in the United States. How do they do it? They implement innovative, life-saving programs such as Bottle Baby Kitten Nursery, which I was there, it was very sweet, Parvo Puppy ICU, Dog Behavior Team, Feline Leukemia Sanctuary, and Medical Triage Clinic, okay? Their accomplishments are they have saved over 20,000 animals since 2008. They played a vital role in making Austin, Texas, the largest no-kill city in the United States. So that's something to be proud of. So what can we do? Austin Pets Alive couldn't continue to save as many companion animals without generous donations of time and resources from people like you. So if you want to, you can adopt, you can foster, you can volunteer, you can donate, you can just find out more about what you can do and help spread the word by going to austinpetsalive.org. That's right. Go to austinpetsalive.org, adopt, foster, do something, man. Those animals are amazing, they're beautiful, and I love them all. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time. How did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Howdy.
When we talk
all right. Hello. I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I have a great, great, great show for you today. I have producer, musician, songwriter Salim Nirala is here with me. He was actually here a couple weeks ago. He just produced the new Old 97s record, the most successful one for them to date. And he was here doing a show with Billy Harvey and Alex Deason. You heard Billy Harvey on Friday. Anyway, this was from a couple of days after Billy's. Salim came over. We sat down. We talked. I didn't really know Salim very well, but I've been a fan of his music, and I've really been getting into his music lately, and I've been listening to it and listening to it. And over the last couple of weeks after I've done the interview, I've continued to listen to it, and I really love him, and I hope that he is coming out with something new, and I look forward to maybe he and I being able to do at least some shows together and having some fun. I think he's going to come and do one of those Strange Brew shows with me. So we will get to this conversation that I have with Salim in just a minute. What's going on with me? Had a great weekend. I played with Skyrocket on Friday at Hanover's. Good show. It was a little strange. I don't know. But it was a good show. So then Saturday, I spent some time with my family and hung out with Zuri Saturday night. And then Sunday, Zuri and I went and met my family again. Had some lunch, Father's Day lunch with my cousin Brian, my cousin Amy, little cousin Elena, and little cousin Chris. It was a great time had by all. And then Sunday night, we went and saw a great fucking show. It was Jazz Mills' Gemini birthday party, which was her birthday party. She talked about it on the podcast that she was on a couple weeks ago. And we went there and saw Otis the Destroyer, who I got to talk to Taylor from that band again today. He used to be in a band called The Couch. They were on the show back then. And now he was on as Otis the Destroyer. Great band, great show, totally rock and roll, totally loud. And then, of course, Leopold and His Fiction played. I was totally floored by that, man. I am such a huge fan of Leopold and His Fiction. I'm such a huge fan of Daniel. Turns out their drummer Trevor is a good friend of mine's nephew. You heard this guy on the show, Eric Jarvis. Big fan of the show, listens to the show, and also was a guest president of the Texas Grammy chapter. That's who he is. Anyway, amazing time last night, or on Sunday night. Great time. And look, man, I talked to a lot of people that were there. A lot of musicians were there. Jeremy from Liars and Saints, got to catch up with him. My friend Adam Stockstill, his wife Christy, we just set up some dinner plans for like a month and a half from now. That's going to happen. but I ran into them, and I ran into a lot of people that talked about the podcast. They were coming up asking me questions. Hey, what's going on with this? And how did this go in the podcast? And I heard this one with this guy. And hey, what have you ever thought of having this guy on? And so it was really interesting. I think people are responding to this show. It's nice to know that the people in my immediate community are listening to it. And I like to hear from you guys. If you're out there and you like the show, or you have ideas for the show, or you didn't like a certain episode or want to say something, tweet at me. I'm at Johnny Gowdy, or go to our Facebook page, How Did I Get Here? Say a little something there. Let us know how we're doing, okay? So while I'm on this talking about what's going on with me, tonight, Tuesday, June 17th, 2014, we are doing a live How Did I Get Here podcast recording at Strange Brew at 8 p.m. My guest will be funny man Charlie Hodge, amazing singer-songwriter and great friend of mine, Graham Wilkinson, and then one of my favorite bands around, Sphinx. Great guys. It's going to be a fun one. All these people are extremely entertaining. Charlie's going to be there. It's always great to have Charlie on a mic, and me, we have a lot to say to each other, and he makes me laugh like crazy. So do that. If you're in Houston, Thursday, June 19th, Skyrocket will be playing at Discovery Green. Look that up, discoverygreen.com in Houston. Find us there. We'll be playing an all-ages early show. Be a great night out under the stars. And then Friday night, June 20th, we will be at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse in Austin playing outside Under the Stars again, an early show. Come on out. Do that. Should be fun. And then Saturday, we're doing something during the day at the Domain or something. I don't even know what it is. Hi, Zuri. Zuri's back. We're going to make some dinner. Hey, so while we do that, why don't you listen to me and Salim Nirala talk? He's a great guy. Just did that old 97s album. It's doing really, really well. He was here doing a show with Billy Harvey and Alex Deason, and we sat down and had a talk. Got a heart-to-heart. Got to know my friend, Salim Nirala. Okay? Hey, if you're not doing anything tonight, come on out to Strange Brew. Do their live podcast. Should be a good time. Now let's talk to Salim Nirala. Let's get down.
Your golf pants on and your yellow tie, dressed to the nines, you're pointing at the sky. But then the doubt kicks in, you feel sick inside, your stomach's heading south, you wanna have a cry.
Horrible study habits.
Yeah,
I've always been a crammer. So like literally 20 minutes before a guest comes over is when I sit down and just write stuff down.
Yeah.
I mean, I go through stuff and like look at stuff like I did with you today. And you did the new old 97s album?
I did.
That's awesome.
Most Messed Up, yeah. Well, yeah. Well, it's really cool because it's already been like their highest chart action they've ever had. Debuted at 30 on the Billboard 200.
Isn't that weird that it took them this long and now?
I know. Well, and this is sort of an unlikely record, really, because I had a really good sense that the critics were going to go crazy over it, because it just felt like one of those records where if they don't dig this, then what are they going to dig? And so the critics are going crazy over it, and they're getting like the best reviews of their career, which is also pretty
it's
amazing.
It's weird. They've always gotten great.
They have, great but like reviews. These reviews are unbelievable, just over the top. And but then for it to do so well, you know, like I think they sold like 10,000 copies first week. Like for them, that's you know, it's putting
for up, anyone right now. That's
for anybody,
a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, because I look it's at Rolling numbers. Stone and like the people that in the you know they show like, oh, this guy's record debuted at number 2. He sold 30,000 records, and it's like, wow, it used to be like crazy numbers.
I know.
How does that how does that affect you as a studio? You're a studio owner? Is that your studio in your bio video? In your
Okay. I have a how's
that
it affect me?
That looks very professional.
Well, thank you.
Video.
It has affected me not one iota.
That's
at this
great.
Point. Yeah, it hasn't done anything. Like I'm actually currently not working as much as I would like to be working. So you know, I'm hoping that maybe it affects me in some way, but right now I'm not feeling it.
That's good.
Yeah.
You said you're making a new solo album. You're working on one?
It's done. Okay. It's done. So have you been to the Tree Fort in Austin, Jack Rock's place?
No, I've heard a lot about
it. Yeah. Well, that's where we did the... Well, that's where my relationship with the Tree Fort started with the old... I produced Grand Theater, Volume 1 and 2.
Right,
the old
right,
97's
right.
Double album. And we did it at the Tree Fort. And then I kind of not only fell in love with the studio, but also, you know, just became great friends with Jack. And then Jim Ballantyne.
Love Jim Ballantyne.
I'm kind of just spoiled now. Like, I cannot listen to a recording that Jim Ballantyne was not involved in.
Really?
But, you know, I just love it, like the aesthetic of the way he records everything. Like, I just love it. So I was, that kind of like set me down this path where, even though I've had my own studio and I had up until the point I actually made a record in
with Billy
yeah, Harvey yeah. right before that. And that was the first one that I'd made somewhere else. And then I just thought, well, man, I've got to make one of my own records at the Tree Fort. So we did this record called Hit Parade, and which the Friends for Life EP came out of
okay.
those sessions.
Extra songs. Yeah.
Yeah. But then we also, it was kind of like this explosion. Like, I had my band in the studio for 4 days, and... we recorded so much stuff that we also start, there were like 5 songs that I already knew were going to be on my next record. Sorry. I have a scratchy voice from screaming last night. At Strange Brew.
At Strange Brew is a place that that makes, really inspires screaming.
Yeah. My new record is called Skeleton Closet. And it really technically started it 3 years ago when I started Hit Parade, because there's, I think, four or five songs on the record that were started then. I just kind of set them aside and came back to them. So that'll hopefully come out later this year. I'm just trying to figure out who's going to put it out, because I've been with this German record label the last...
I saw that, yeah.
And you know, things have gotten really hard for them, and, you know, like, they're not hard everywhere, but
right.
And then, you know, they've put a lot of money into me and not necessarily recouped much. So we kind of, I coming into this, I kind of felt like it would be pretty miraculous if they released Skeleton Closet, and their feedback was that they felt like it was probably my strongest record, but they just don't have the money. So now I'm kind of just trying to figure out other options.
So. You would you want a label to put it out?
I'm going to get it out either way. The what the label would represent for me is just, I don't have the money to properly promote it.
Yeah.
So like, just hiring a publicist or a radio promoter, it's like, and I know a couple guys that are really great and pretty affordable, but like, it's just a lot on top of pressing it and then dealing with everything. So it's not absolutely imperative. Like, I will put it out that way, but if I have to fund it myself, it's just going to be a big financial drain.
Yeah.
That I'm not necessarily at this moment ready to tackle.
Sure.
So,
and you know what you know how many records you sell?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I have that problem too. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do all this shit. And then yeah. I sit down and start thinking about it. I'm like, don't sell that many records.
Yeah. Well, I'm feeling really good though about, like, I've got so many CDs in my studio, like in the closet in my studio, but like, I keep playing and just, it's just like literally selling them one at a time, two at a time, five at a time. And the other day I had to go find a bunch of CDs and replace the ones that I've sold. So I feel like I'm chipping away.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just one of those things where chipping away is different than, you know, you're not really going to put that money back in the bank anytime soon.
No.
You know?
No.
And it requires me continuing to, like, get out there and pound the pavement, basically, yeah. Which is like what Billy and Alex and I are doing right now. You know, what we did last night.
You're doing 7 shows?
Yeah. Yeah. An entire week. And, Like, it's totally grassroots. Like, I booked the tour. There's no manager or booking agents or, like, you know, and we're doing it ourselves. We're selling our own merch. We're, you know, it's just, and I love it.
Are you guys all
on
stage at the same time?
Yeah, we are.
I saw pictures. Oh, that's great. Yeah. How long is the show?
It's at least 2 hours. And I think that that's, like, last night we went a little over.
That's cool.
2 hours. But, it's been so much fun.
Yeah.
And I'm just a fan. I've been a big fan of Billy's for so long. And Alex too. And I mean, I think I've known.
You did a record of his?
Well, I just produced the new Damn Wells record, which is still, it's still in production. So it's, we don't know when it's going to be.
Does he live in Dallas?
He lives in LA.
Okay.
So Billy and Alex are both in LA now.
Right. So, and you guys did the Damn Wells at your place?
We did it at the Tree Fort, actually.
Okay, wow.
We used my place for, like, pre-production and some, I don't even think, like, we just did some minor overdubbing there, but, like, it was, it's a Tree Fort situation.
Yeah.
With Valentine Engineering.
And, right.
You know.
Are you here a lot, then?
I'm here a fair amount now.
Just hang out.
Yeah, I would love to.
Do you drink?
I do.
Good. I've been around all these people lately that don't drink, and I feel like I've got to ask that question now.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I don't drink
last
all
night
day.
I did.
You did?
Yes.
I did. When did I? I was a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
I slow down now that I. How you? We're around the same age.
Yeah.
How
old is that?
I'm 45.
I'm 47.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize you were that fucking old.
Yeah,
I am. You're the same age as well, you, wait a minute, because there's
do you know the Bob Schneider story?
I do. He told that story on this show.
Yeah.
And that's what I was getting to right now. You guys met in El Paso?
Yeah, well, the crazy thing is, I love these, like, little connections now that I find as I get older. Like, you just, you realize, like, if you ask people questions, sometimes you just end up finding funny little things. So my brother was born in a very small town called Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Okay.
And
that's where Bob's from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've never actually met any other people from Ypsilanti, but we grew up in El Paso, and I don't have to tell the whole story because Bob's already told it, but basically it was just strange. That was a strange connection, and then we were all going to move to Austin together, and then I kind of bailed and took my brother and myself to Denton, which is, like, a really good move, by the way. Joking. This is,
really?
Yeah, joking. What Not
year,
a good move.
What year was that? Late
that,
80s?
That was, late 80s.
In the time of like, the Ten Hands.
Yeah. And the funny thing, Bob may not have mentioned this, but, like, he didn't come here. Like, he was not coming here to be a lead singer.
No.
Like, he was just playing keyboards in our band, and, like, he was a really good musician, but, like, I think that, like, Bruce Smith might have been the guy that, like, really, like, I think that's the guy who like, singled out that Bob was charismatic and the girls liked him and that he could sing and maybe he would be a good front man.
Who was fronting it then, you?
Well, I was in our band, which was I was a terrible frontman at the point. At that point, I could barely sing, but I was writing songs. Writing songs has always been why I played music. Like, and that it also has influenced my production style, because to me, it's always about the song. It really is. It's
totally.
Like, and there I see so many people spending so much time doing all this other stuff, and it's like, if you don't have a song that's worthy, then everything else is nonsense. But so that's where, like, I was at the beginning of my whole trip writing songs,
right.
But I hadn't figured out anything else at that early point.
Were the songs good?
I think they were okay for my age.
Yeah.
I think looking back, it's sometimes hard for me to get past the terrible vocals. So.
That's like my problem with my early work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's they were just abysmal. So,
were you trying to sing in a, I had an affectation where I couldn't not end anything, any line without some kind of blues trail. And it was just, like, not very good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think what messed me up was my love of the Beatles, actually, because they were all tenors, you know, like with really high voices. And so I didn't have any like lower range baritone role models as it, and I think a lot of times, like when I see young singers, I think there's a thing I thought about a lot is like finding your vocal identity is like really a big part of singing. It's not whether you've got the greatest range in the world or not,
Lou
or
Reed,
whether,
you know what I mean? Like there's, that guy would never, or fucking Billy Harvey. I've actually had this conversation with people like, can you imagine Billy Harvey auditioning for fucking American Idol? I mean, can you imagine what they would say? Like, they'd be like, dude, you got to fucking like.
Or me.
Yeah. Anybody, really, when you think. I mean, even someone like Bob, like,
they
might be like, hey, buddy, I don't know what the hell you're trying to do. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, as not, a, just a singer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But these are all guys that have a really strong vocal identity. And, and some of the greatest singers, like rock. That's what rock and roll is about. Is like look at Paul Westerberg from The Replacements.
Exactly.
Who I love. You know, Elvis Costello, you know, Lou Reed, whoever it always comes back to like having an identifiable voice that people look. Tom Petty does not have an appealing voice, really.
When you think about it,
when you think, break it down,
but he's
an amazing singer, but he's also Tom freaking Petty. Like he's the only person that sounds like it.
You know, that's a guy though that we were around for him coming out.
Yeah.
And I mean my mom was a hippie and had like the hippie, everyone listened to rock and roll and all that shit. When he came out, it was like American Girl came out. I remember American Girl being a song because we lived in Marin County when it came out, and somehow it was on the radio there.
Yeah.
And that's just the birds with the guy that sings Bob Dylan.
Yeah, yeah.
That's exactly what they would all say.
Sure.
And then sure enough, you know, that's a voice the second you hear that.
Second. And so really, if you can find, it's fine for young singers. I mean, I've heard a lot of amazing young singers lately. But sometimes I just think, well, but who is this person? Like, you know, their voice just sounds like, well, it's really great. They're really good. But like, it's not unique and it's not identifiable as you know. And so I think finding your vocal identity is, and so for me, I was tragically confused at the beginning because I was trying to sing out of my range, sing like the Beatles, and that's not my voice. Right. That's not my vocal identity. That's not. So it was just like trial and error and hearing recordings and just going, oh my God, it's so terrible. And then, oh, what do I do? Like, how do I like, and just slowly work because there was no one around coaching me or probably you or
I was really lucky. Yeah. My mom, you know, Mark Hallman.
No,
he's a producer here in town. He was like best friends with my mom. So like when I decided I wanted to be a musician, I would just be like, you know, I really had an incredible resource.
That's great.
Yeah. Most people didn't have that.
So then you did have that.
I did have that.
Which is
great.
Yeah. A lot of, you know,
I had pros like, you know, like real guys.
That's good.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Sorry.
I didn't have anything. I didn't have anything. I just had a lot of bad recordings that I had to listen to and then just eventually, you know, just try to get to the point. And I kind of had a come to Jesus moment. I can use that. That's a fair way to say it. Like at some point, right when I went solo, I had spent so many years hating my voice and just not being able to listen to anything I'd ever recorded that I was just like, well, if I can't get to a point where I can do this and listen to my records and like them, then there's no point in continuing because this is just torture. Like, what, I might as well just be a banker or, you know, sell insurance or something because
sounds so torturous though. Well, like you have this dream, but you can't achieve it.
Well, no, yeah, but
like
that's
physically
when,
you have physical limitations.
That's when I just turned up the, you know, like I just applied the I just went over that edge and I made a record that I could listen
record.
To. Yeah. My very first solo record, Polaroid, which I still feel good about. I just was committed to, I am going to, you know, I'm either going to have, I'm going to make a record that I'm going to like, including the way I'm singing, and if I can't, then I'm done. And I felt like I achieved that aim, and that it was a great way, actually, in retrospect, to start my solo thing, because I achieved this thing, finally, this peace, like just with myself, like of having a record that I was, that I could listen to and be okay with. And then I've just rolled forward from there, you know, and I've really, that's kind of,
I mean, you have rolled forward. Me and Billy were even talking about this on the, we did one of these like on Thursday, and he was saying like, you're very inspirational to him because you don't stop. You just keep on putting out records, and you definitely have something to say, and it's coming out, and it's always, you know, brilliant and really beautiful.
That's really, you know, nice to hear.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I love your music. I've been listening to it a lot this weekend. I went out of town to play some shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
I wanted to make the show last night, but my grandpa died like almost a month ago. And I went over to my grandma's and hung out. And she was like, "Are you going to leave?" And I was like, "No, I'll hang out until, you know, after we eat or whatever."
Well, that was important.
Yeah, I'm glad very you important. Did that. Yeah. She's a. That's an interesting thing. You know, speaking of relationships, I heard Louis C.K. say, you know, when you get into a relationship with someone, it's just a countdown to getting dumped or something horrible going down and you split up. But the best thing that can happen in this relationship is that you stay together till one of you dies and then leaves the other one, you know, after all this time.
Yeah.
Like, really, what's the what's the payoff?
Yeah.
But seeing someone that was... like lived for somebody for 68 years, they were married, you know.
Wow.
And she kind of doesn't have a lot to do. I actually offered her the job as my assistant if she felt like she needed to kind of take care of something.
Yeah.
You know, she had four daughters and
grandkids.
And then after everyone was gone, she kind of took care of my grandfather. But now she's just kind of like, she doesn't really know what to do.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing.
That's a hard thing.
Nobody knows.
It's a really hard
thing. Yeah, I don't think anybody knows what to do. So anyway, so Billy and I were talking about how great your and prolific. Great and prolific. Nice. Almost in the style of a Bob Schneider that can keep on putting out great quality stuff and keeps on, or Tom Petty, you know what I mean?
Well, thanks. I think as far as the not stop, I think I've been in some ways, like, you know, because I've got two kids and they're, you know, youngish. Like, my daughter's only 4.5, and I'm beginning to recognize, and you saying that, sort of hearing it from an outside perspective, that like I've just kept pushing forward, like, because I feel like if I stopped or if I just went off the road, that I might not come back, you know, so there's this, I almost see it as this, the inner 9-year-old in me is just, who was determined at that age to do this my entire life, is still, you know, just like, you know, you book the gig and you do it and you always have something on the horizon that keeps you moving forward. Because if I stop, then again, it's just what I just said,
Yeah, like, I get scared of that shit too.
Yeah. I took a break, a 9-month break a few years ago, and it scared the shit out of me.
Because, like, when you say 9-month break, what?
I didn't play any gigs for 9 months. It's the longest that I'd... I actually quit music. Now we're getting into other stuff.
I love that. I've done that twice.
I quit music when my brother and I used to, you know, my brother,
right,
Ferris, we used to play. We fell out with each other in like 97 after we did the recordings that ended up being that Nirala Brothers.
Are you guys back? Are you...
No.
You don't talk?
Well, we'll wind into that. Okay, but so. I did quit music when I fell out with him the first time because I didn't believe that I could do it on my own. Like, we were very much, you know, codependent. Like, just what he did well, I didn't do well. What I felt like I did well, he didn't do well. And it ended up being a beautiful thing for me in the end when I did come back. And, like, and then, you know, I'm so much more of a well-rounded entity now because I've, you know, I've not been depending on my brother for the last 15 years. But yeah, the only other break I took was just a 9-month break where I decided to stop playing in Dallas because I felt like I was oversaturating. And then when I came back from that, I came back with a whole, like, it really was weird for me. And then I thought, well, it doesn't matter. I don't care if I'm oversaturating it. I'm a musician. I'm here to play.
Yeah.
And if people come, great. And if they don't, whatever, I'm still going to have fun. I'm still going to do my thing. And so now I play when I want to play and I don't worry about it.
Why did you do this stopping for 9 months? Because you were oversaturating and you were tired of it.
Well, because it gets, like, I felt like I had my first cut, like some good things were happening in Dallas. Finally, after all the years of being in Dallas and being, couldn't get arrested, nothing, like the Nirala brothers were on the cover of the Dallas Observer,
right.
2004. Yeah. We were getting, you know, good press. People were beginning to finally come to my shows. Like, was at the point where I could play and a couple hundred people would come. And so it kind of felt like, you know, on the business side of things, you know that you can't keep doing that locally because you dilute your audience. Like if you have 200 people come, like see from one of my shows, for example, but then I'm playing every, you know, two yeah. weeks, yeah. then.
Or even more.
Yeah.
Or I mean, more. Like if you lived here, you know how it is here.
You end up. So what ended up happening was at that point, I made a decision that I thought was a business decision, like to just basically be like, well, I'm going to play less and then
create more
people.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't work that way.
No.
They just kind of
forget about you.
They forget about you. They have kids. They do other things. Yeah. And then I'm a musician. I want to play.
Yeah.
So then I'm thinking, well, this doesn't work on any level.
No.
So I took the 9 month break of playing, you know, with that in mind, and it really all, but it was still positive. It was positive because it made me realize I didn't want to do that. And it did jolt me into like being like, when I came back, it felt so weird. And like, I don't like, I really, it's like, you got to keep like performing and playing. And it's just like, it's like our bodies, like you can't like sit on a couch for 2 years and then
jump up
and look
play.
Like Brad Pitt,
right?
You know,
exactly.
like you,
exactly.
we have to, we're in a it's constant a state of
yeah.
decay. Like we've got to, like, it's a muscle. You got to move your body. You got to sing, you got to play guitar.
Yeah.
You got to be in front of people. And so to me now it's like, it's just like running or, you know, doing anything that you
exactly
do to maintain
how I look
yourself.
At it too. Yeah.
yeah. I just do it all the time.
It's like, a muscle. Just like writing is a muscle. Like if you don't,
totally.
Like I haven't been writing a lot over the last year.
Uh-huh.
And it, when I sit down to write a song, I mean, it is like a super fucking intimidating.
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're intimidated. You know, you wrote shit that was good before. How are you going to, how do you do that now? Like, what did I do to write that song? That was so like, you try to replicate it, like start a drum machine. Oh, I started with the drum machine and playing a G. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it gets a little weird. You need to keep it going because it is like all of a sudden waking up and thinking you can run a marathon without having trained for
Well, it's
months.
True. I, you know, that, I mean, that leads me to, like, I've got all kinds of thoughts, obviously, about writing. But, like, one of the things I've always done for myself is I have never, ever put any pressure on myself to write. So it is, in a way, it's a different, a little bit of a different,
That's
like,
weird.
Like I don't, like, I feel like, but I'm always collecting, like I'm writing down phrases that people say or that come to me that are, you know, work and thinking about titles or so I'm, in some ways I'm always writing.
Right.
But I'm not because like, for example, right now, I haven't written a song this year. And I don't care because I have so many songs that have been written in the last couple of years that haven't even been released. But then I also feel like even though I haven't technically written a song, I'm thinking about songs.
Yeah.
I'm feeling
Maybe
things.
Recharging.
I'm
getting, you know, some more then, information for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, whenever it happens, it's going to be a totally natural thing. It'll be like it'll just be like floodgate. Like it's going to happen. It's not just going to be one song. It'll be like, you know,
yeah,
explosion
yeah.
or expulsion or whatever.
Yeah.
And then all these songs will come out and then I may go, another year or whatever, or however long it is. It's like,
it doesn't scare you.
No,
you know, it's there waiting for you when you get back to it.
Yeah, I think that that's something too. Like I've just years of thinking of one of the things to me that's so messed up in a way about what I call the machine, the business of music, which is being in that machine. Which is that, you know, we know what the cycle is. It's like you make a record, a bunch of people buy it, and then you go play, you go on tour, you go everywhere, and then boom, you need another record,
mm-hmm.
and then. So in this big machinery, where is the songwriter given time to basically, you know, write and to really, you know, develop. And the Beatles were remarkable, like considering what they did and the way they were growing. But we already know that. It's ridiculous. Nobody can compare themselves to the Beatles because it was stupid.
No, I know. But there's also that thing, too, where like the way that the machine works. Like, I noticed this a lot with like even people that write films, like somebody like Diablo Cody, who wrote the... people go and they write a story, a real story about real people and action. And then they move into the machine. I think it happens with songwriters all the time. People's second album is about fame and getting in, you know, this person wants this from me now. And you know what I mean? And like these people write like a story like Juno, and it's like a totally human story from like middle America, like with real people with no outside Hollywood shit. And their next one is about a young screenwriter trying to get his movie made or something. You know what I mean?
It's
need real life information is basically what I'm trying to say. Not just the business sometimes comes in when you get in the business, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And you're aware of records and selling, and there's this report and there's that thing, and you got to make sure that you're ranking. Sometimes to me that just totally kills your vibe.
Well, yeah, I think where I was going with that too is that like I do believe that song, like maybe in what you were talking about, if you're putting pressure on yourself to recreate something you've done, or there's pressure that you feel like you need to write, or there's pressure that you need to make a new album because the public is clamoring for your, I think anytime you put that and affix it to writing, for me, at least in my personal experiences, it's problematic. It's like, because I do feel like this writing is this weird, it's like you're tuning into this weird channel out on Mars or in your subconscious or whatever. And you have to be in this just state of complete openness to do it. And so, like, I just wait for those moments where I'm able to tune into the station and bring in the song, and then and not ever be like, okay, I haven't written a song in 8 months. Oh my God, I've got to write a song. If I, that'd be a disaster. Like I couldn't. I could write a song.
I think that's how,
you know, it might not be that great.
Yeah. No, I think what you're saying is exactly what I'm experiencing right now. That I've spent too much time away from it, and I'm giving it too much weight.
Yeah. You can't give it any weight.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to completely surrender to just... And let these ideas and these feelings and the things that inspire you at the right moment to come to the surface, and then you'll do it. And without this weight of what you've done in the past or what you... Or needing to do it or putting
pressure
on yourself.
Be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really the gift, like, for us to have that, you know, that gift from the universe, really, like to be able to go there, because so many people, like, that's a totally foreign thing. Like, it's just like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know,
most people don't deal with like the deep seated emotions in their subconscious.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And we revel in that shit.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
But you know, it's not an on off switch to me. Like, you can't, it's not like the lights.
No,
I'm going to turn on the lights now, and, you know, I don't know. That's my two cents on that.
So your new record that's going to come out later this year, you produced it yourself?
I guess, yeah. You know, I wish, like, I mean, Jim Valentine it is involved to a certain extent.
It's nice to hear his name. I liked him a lot. I've always liked him.
He's a wonderful person. And I'd love to make another record with Billy someday. You know, I don't know if we'll ever... that experience that I made with him, like, really, I feel like Constellation is the only album that I've made where someone else really did produce it, because Billy was the producer, and he you know, I got so much out of that experience, you know, even as a, not just as a writer, like, where I really felt like, oh man, I've Like, I'm not going to come to this guy with, like, a load of rubber. Like, I really felt that great inspiration of wanting to bring him songs that I could look him in the face and play him and not be, like, embarrassed or feel like, oh, his songs are so much better. Because I am a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but then also as a producer, like, he had ways of doing things that I, you know.
What a compliment, though, to him to, you know. Well, a producer's producer. Like, literally, he is a producer's producer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because, I mean, there were so many things. So, like, at the end of that, I felt like I had just gone to, like, Tibet or something and, like, been in a monastery, you know, some sort of, you know, with the monks and learned all, you know, like, I had this totally
so great,
Zen
though.
Experience with him. Like,
yeah.
And I think that it, for sure, it, like, made me a better producer. It made me a better songwriter. It made me a better everything that I'm trying to be better at, everything that we're all trying to be better at.
Yeah.
Like, working with Billy did that.
Yeah.
In spades.
That's great.
So I'm on cloud nine this week, like, hanging out with him and, like, playing shows with him and Alex. I mean, this is like, for me, this is like, it doesn't get any better than this. Like, this is the pinnacle of what I want to be doing.
And having fun.
Having
your friends.
Amazing time, you know, up till 4 in the morning last night, just being silly, sitting around the piano, singing songs.
That is awesome.
You know,
where
that's...
Where were you at with the piano?
Well,
Strange Brew?
We got some... No. There was no piano at Strange Brew.
They kept it open until after party.
Yeah. And it's great. I think that, like, I just look at it, too, like, this may be the only time this ever happens. I hope it's not, but really, if it is, then I just want to squeeze every single second, you know, out of it, you know, just and savor every single day, every single moment that we have, and then we're on to the next thing, whatever it is. But I'm really here right now, like, in this. It doesn't matter what else is going on in my life or whatever I have to go home to or what it's like right now. I want to make the absolute most out of this time that I have with these two guys and this experience, like, which I've never done anything like this. Like, and Billy and I were talking about this last night. Like, one of the things I'm so in love with still with this thing that we get to do, because it's so incredible in so many ways. And one of my favorite ways is, okay, you and I, we've been at it forever.
Yeah.
Just when you think that you've played, you've seen it all, you've done it all, you've done, you know, we've been really lucky. We've had all the, it never ends. No, there are so many things to experience and do. And that's what's so amazing about this life, you know, and like, I played my first show last year with no microphones. I was when they first told me that we were going to do a show that way, I instantly seized it. I was like, what? No microphones? You can't play like that. And then we did it. And I went, what a dumb ass I am. I cannot believe. I want to play every show like this.
I went through a phase like that.
Like, yeah. I want to play every single show like this. And so, on a Saturday night, something funny happened. We had a private show that we did, private party, and we played outside at first. And it was fine. We were on this porch, and there was all these people like 20 feet away or more. Like, it was very disconnected to me, and, you know, the PA sounded great, and it was. But then I'd had a couple drinks, and I thought, well, I feel like we gotta shake this up, you know. We're going unplugged. Let's just go unplugged and just sing in the living room. Get everyone to come in the house, not talk, and let's do this. And Billy admitted to me last night, he said, when you first said that, I was like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. Yeah. I don't want to do that. But then he had so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
He just like...
When you can create like a moment for people.
It was so much fun. Yeah. It was so much fun. And like... it's amazing. Like, people give us money to play and entertain them and share our feelings with them and you know, not like a ton of money, but
no, but it's hard to believe that.
Still,
yeah.
You know, And then just to have all of these experiences and like at this point, like I just want to make records with my, I have so many beautiful friends and so many ridiculously talented and humble friends, people that should
it's
be
funny
famous.
Too, we're getting
or
older,
could, you know,
and humility comes in pretty strong.
Well,
as you start, it's got
as you start to.
Getting
I mean,
to be our age.
Yeah, I mean, you can't make it this far right. too, and be playing music at this level, and if you're not, you know, or if you're bitter. Like the it weeds out the bitter because the you know actually and I don't mean this to slag my brother, but he was bitter. He yeah. got bitter early, and you know he it ate him up, and I've seen other people that yeah. that bitterness ate up. And it's like you can never,
dude. Sorry, I can't tell you how much of that and how scared I have always been of becoming that, because I've always hung out with older people,
yeah.
older musicians,
mm-hmm.
and they, you know, not the happiest people as they get older.
Sure,
you know, especially if they don't have a ton of success, they don't yeah. appreciate what they actually have.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And I was noticing in myself that I would find other people's successes and stuff to almost be like against me.
Sure,
you know what I mean, like that, like you got to. Why is Salim producing the fucking mm-hmm. old 97's record?
Yeah,
why didn't they ask me? Well, I don't know them, and I'm not hanging out with them all the time. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure.
I'm not submitting stuff, and I'm not putting myself out there to them. And you know what I mean? Instead
yeah.
of looking inward and seeing what you can do, a lot of being able to do this show, I knew would stop me from feeling that way. There's this guy, Mark Maron,
uh-huh.
has a podcast
yeah.
called What the Fuck?
Yeah,
and a lot of what he was getting out of this and sort of this solace of like, it's okay. I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not losing to everyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't have yeah. to view your success as a personal attack or you doing well. You have to, must be my enemy. And I wasn't fully like that, but I could,
there's
I
a
could
little,
feel
I think
myself
it's in a lot of,
like that.
Well, I have a short story to share with you. It involves Ben Queller. When Ben Queller was a kid, a baby, when I was, you know,
yeah.
playing in, you know, in Deep Ellum, and here comes Ben Queller. He's in Radish, which very, you know, for us, you know, sounded a lot like Nirvana, whatever. But
right.
And he gets a 6-figure advance. And we find out, well, Ben Queller's dad, well, the rumor, I don't know if it's true, but like I had heard his dad was an A&R guy, worked for Mercury or whatever, and boom, he's like off. I always had this attitude, like, fucking Ben Queller.
Yeah,
you
the fuck
know,
is that
you
guy?
Know,
yeah.
I love Ben Queller now.
Yeah.
Like, he's so good.
Yeah.
And he's such an amazing, beautiful person.
Yeah.
And, like, and I've been dabbling in booking a little bit in Fort Worth lately. And I booked him at this show and saw him about a month ago. It's the best show that I've seen in, like, two
That's
years.
Amazing.
And so, like, I think it's just, you know, we all have those little bouts of you know.
Insecurity.
And I had an attitude for so long.
Yeah.
Well, and just, but just because... It does. It hurts. It's like, this is what we love to do, and we just like want to be able to and it does sometimes feel like when someone else has, but we're all in the same struggle, all of us.
All
like
of us.
Even I look at like Red or Bob or you know maybe that have
yeah.
made a little bit more money or
yeah.
or do they're still like have to work to just maintain, just to keep what is happening
yeah.
going and. But I also feel very, very strongly that it's up to us to support each other and like help each other.
I totally
and,
believe in that.
And really, really, because it's so hard, and it is this thing where for all of us to like keep going, keep doing it, keep making good music. We have a beautiful network of friends and like connections, and but. We all need to help each other and
right.
support each other and be, and that's what I love again about like coming back to what Alex and Billy and I are doing. We are helping each other because like if I came and played in Austin by myself last night, do you think that we would have sold out Strange Brew? No. If Billy had, no, Billy would have done well.
Right.
We would have all done okay.
Right.
But like together,
joining forces,
what we're doing yeah. and, you know, I had fans of mine buying their stuff last night. They
yeah.
had the same thing. It's like spreading the word and helping. And then so like for us three, none of us could have done a Texas tour like this on our own and made any money or like really made it successful. But we can do that together and then have an awesome time.
Yeah,
and,
on top
and,
of it all.
So it's like working, you know, to me, it's a perfect example, in action, of working together and making something even better. And for all of us, you know, like, because I would love for any one of us to be able to start coming back to these cities on our own,
yeah,
and be able to play,
yeah,
you know. But also, if I have to do it this way for the rest of my life, I'd be pretty happy doing that too. Like, we'll
it's
just
nice to
play
go with
my
friends,
friends
and not just have to be by, yeah, yourself, you know.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And but it, there's also, but there's a, you know, a lot of trust involved too, because like, we didn't rehearse any each other's songs. We're just standing up there, like, as each of us play our separate songs, like, just jumping in and playing or singing or do. To me, I love that. Like, it's really.
I love it when everybody has taste.
Yeah. Well,
I don't like the guy from when you start.
Sure.
Just like,
yeah, yeah. But that's not happening.
Right, right, right.
But, it's, it, you know, I know that, that it's not for everyone, like, to find the right chemistry or the right. But that's also kind of where I feel like producing all these years, I've developed a sense a little bit for that, that I didn't have 15 years ago.
Almost like a sensitivity for the song.
Yeah. And also chemistry, putting the right people in the right place, and to where, you know, the result is like, coming into this, I already knew, like, this is going to be, people are going to come to these shows and leave and go, God, what did I just see? That was a different thing.
Yeah. Plus, and there's something that people like it, and then there's an element of more than one person like that, and people have great personalities. You do get, yeah, almost like what people were attracted to seeing the Rat Pack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, these guys are all, yeah, there's some, they're going to go after this, and until 4 yeah in the morning, they're going to be around a piano somewhere, yeah, drinking, still
we
doing,
doing
this.
We were.
And we got to see, right, like 2 hours of it. You know, yeah, dude, that makes the fucking hair on my arm stand up.
That's awesome.
That shit is, it's real, true, man. That's,
it
fucking
is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And tonight we're probably going to go see Bob, you know, and
oh, yeah,
like, and then maybe end up around a piano somewhere. I don't, yeah, know. Yeah. It's beautiful. Like, to me, that's it. And you can't, it just, it's one thing. It's one reason I'm glad I've just stuck out being in Texas, you know, like, and I've had a many, many lean years of playing music, and it's been, like, the way I've looked at my music career, if it's a career, is...
It is, though. It's a legitimate, yeah, career.
Is, I have literally been, I feel like ever since I was a kid, been pushing this ball ever so slowly, giant-ass heavy ball up a mountain.
Little Sisyphus.
And just, but I always feel like it's just moving.
It's moving,
It's,
yeah,
not moving very quickly.
No.
Been easy. It's never been, like... But there's a deep satisfaction that I have too now for every little thing that I also think that's something that good about age and experience, and is a deep, deep satisfaction for, and also that my friends are here. I've lost plenty of friends now in my life, and friends like Carter Albrecht and
that was a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I liked that guy a lot. I didn't, yeah, get to spend a lot of time with him, but the times that I did were all backstage at the Granada, yeah, but always really great.
Yeah, he was one of a kind, truly, like an incredible person. But also just knowing that, you know, none of us are here forever, obviously. None of us even know when we're going to go. And to just be on stage, like with my friend Joe Reyes, I don't know if you know him from Buttercup.
Yes.
He plays guitar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just love him so much, or Alex or Billy or any of the guys in my band or anybody, like, just, and be like, we're here, we're alive right now, and we're, yeah, and just enjoy this moment, because, you know, just, and I don't mean that in a depressing or like,
not
like
at all, you mean it in a, you mean, yeah, it in a life affirming,
yeah,
way.
It's like
while you're alive
here,
live
today,
yeah,
yeah, like, you know,
I think it was Bon Jovi who said, I just want to live while I'm alive. I can't believe I just thought that. I think it was a great Western philosopher, John Bon Jovi, who said.
Here's high five right there.
That was a sad high five.
Yeah, it was. Well, we're kind of far away, yeah, from each other.
It's true, though. I mean,
it is absolutely true. It's, I feel it every day. Like, actually, I have a song on the new record that I'm really excited about. It's called Terlingua. And the chorus is, are we going to live tonight? Are we going to live tonight? Are we going to live tonight, Johnny?
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh, you put my name in the song?
Yeah. I put it in right now. But you know, Terlingua was a, you know, it's a ghost town now. It was wiped out in I think, 19, either 18 or 28. But, like, there's this amazing cemetery. It's amazing
to
me.
What was it wiped out from?
A flu epidemic.
Oh, wow.
And when I went there and stood in, and I'm not a big, you know, I'm not into cemetery imagery or I've never been into that really, but being there, I had like some sort of spiritual, like just, it was like, wait, we're alive, we're here. And this is like every single day I want to like just take as much out of that day as possible. Mm-hmm. And help people and enjoy, you know, I want to be a positive part of people's lives. I want to, you know, like just, it's a gift. Every single day we have is a gift. And I don't know, like just, I don't want to squander any more of, time. You know, any more time.
Yeah.
With whatever, like whatever we get hung up on.
Is that
like,
something that people were starting? Because I feel like that, I feel like Bob's really like that. I feel like a lot of people around our age are very acutely aware of mortality. Has that happened to you in the 30s? And then once you start getting into your 40s, you start being like, okay, well, this is a real fucking thing.
Well,
see a lot of people die.
Yeah. Know? I can trace it directly back. My second record, Beautiful Noise, was a mortality record, but it was because my son, who was only 3 months old, he had craniosynostosis.
What is that?
It's where the plates in your head fuse together prematurely, so they have to go in and cut the bone and separate them so that the head can form. It really shook me up as far as thinking. It was my first big dose of, like, I'd never experienced loving anything as much as I love my son, and then, you know, him being so brand new and then being so worried. I think that was the beginning for me with that, and that record documented really, like, there's a lot of, and I don't play a lot of songs on that record actually, Johnny, because there's a defining moment for me as a performer where I was actually opening for the old 97s solo acoustic at Stubbs Outdoor. Beautiful Noise had just come out, and it was like hot as shit, and like I'm up there on that stage by myself, and I'm playing these quiet songs about
death.
and I remember Ken may even said, Ken Bethay might have, who's been, you know, great supporter and friend over the years, he even said something like, God damn, Salim, way to start the party.
Yeah.
Way to kick the party up. And I just, I realized, like, for me, like people can go listen to that record, and I want them to, but like, as far as what I want to like bring to my life, like you have to walk the fine line. You have to find a way to connect, to get people to come in to the deeper message sometime. And it's not coming.
The first single. You know. That's what it's called.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Well, I just remember when I was on Elektra, there was, or before, when our band was being shopped, everyone said like, oh man, this band's got nothing but hits. They just don't have the first single.
Yeah,
and I was always like,
the first single.
The fuck? And I understand what that means.
Yeah.
It's a self-defining, but also inviting.
Yeah.
So that they can explore the rest of what is in Salim's mind and heart.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've been working on these past few years. It's just, I think, like, actually Beautiful Noise is coming up on its 10-year, you know, it's been 10 years, and I think I'm going to do some shows where we just do the entire record, and because there are people now that have the record and would really love to hear those songs, maybe, and we're just going to go there. We'll just go and be in that sort of dark space.
I would like to see that. So. I was going to ask you, I know this is weird, I should probably ask you off mic, but it puts more pressure for you to say yes. I'm doing these shows, a residency. You know Jeff Plankenhorn?
Yeah. I don't like know him.
But you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Okay, he has a residency at Strange Brew, and he's leaving for the summer, so I'm taking over for July and August. But I'm supposed to get people to come down and play. I would love to have you. Are you free on Tuesdays?
Of course I would love to. Okay. Yeah, I can awesome. Make well, myself free. We'll me, do it.
Okay, good. I have another thing I want to touch on with you.
Yeah.
You get to be in a band with Paul Slavens.
I do.
That's yeah. fucking awesome.
I know.
For 25 years, that guy has been one of my, well, maybe 26 at this point. Maybe the first time I saw Ten Hands was in 1988.
Yeah. It's so much. Well, that's just another thing. It's like I feel ridiculously lucky at this point. Like, I'm not only am I still doing my solo thing, but now I'm in the best band I've ever been in, the Travoltas. And
what's are you guys active?
We are. We just went to the Tree Fort in April and actually cut 14 songs. And
it's a cover band?
No.
No, it's an original band.
It's an original band. Yeah, how the Travoltas, it's a weird. It's a, I'll Explain try to tell to this me. Quickly.
Yeah.
But on my last solo album, Hit Parade, the last one that's been released, I wrote a song called Travolta, which was not
I like
about
that song
John
a lot.
Travolta.
Yeah.
But there's a moment in one verse about self-confidence and the guy's wearing a white suit like Travolta.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I had this song. And then my youngest brother, Amir, was trying to... He knew I was thinking about forming a band, and he was really sweet one day. He like gave me this list of all these band names. And I didn't like most of them, but then I saw he'd written down the Travoltas. And I thought, that's a pretty good... I like
that.
That's a great
name.
I like that name.
Yeah.
And then I already kind of... It already kind of made me... Like, Paul has a great sense of humor. And like Paul and I were not going to form a band called, like,
exactly.
The rain cloud umbrellas with the dark, gloomy faces. Yeah, you know, we were... Of course we were going to be probably in a pop band or some sort of...
Goofy.
You know.
Yeah.
But then what happened after that was I was on eBay... I collect vintage suits, and I found these amazing 70s tuxedos in all kinds of different sizes, these peach tuxedos, for $25 a suit, and it was like done. I bought the whole band, sent them all to the tailor, and then the Travoltas were born, because we had the song, made the name, made the suits, then the band, and I already kind of, but really also my relationship with Paul, like I had done these sit downs like we're doing right now, where like he had interviewed me for like I think my first two or three solo albums that came out. We had done
a radio show, right?
track by track, and I'd had so much fun. And then I'd done a few shows with him in Denton, and then we did this one show where we were just goofing around, and he started jacking with the arrangements of how to play my songs. And we did like 1978, like Meatloaf, and like. And I loved it. It was so much fun. So really when we started the Travoltas musically, like I didn't have any new songs for the Travoltas, or I had a couple, but it started as we were doing all these weird versions of my songs.
Yeah.
And what's been cool is in the two years plus, I guess, that we've been together, now we've morphed into developing this. What is this sound outside of just being a Salim Nirala weird cover band, but like, what is the sound of the Travoltas and what, and how, and it's it is different than what I do. So like, I clearly recognize now, like in almost using Rhett Miller as an example, like what Rhett Miller does solo is very different than what the old 97s
do.
Yeah,
very much so.
But it's all Rhett. Yeah. And now I've been able to kind of, I think tap into like this other thing that I, it's like my alter ego, you know?
Yeah.
And started performing for the first time without a guitar, like just singing. Like, because
as
a kid,
yeah.
It was. Because as a kid, I loved, you know, guys who sang and played guitar, like John Lennon and Joe Strummer. And and I had a very rigid, like, I didn't realize how rigid it was, actually. Like, well, those guys, you know, like David Lee Roth and whatever, I'm not one of those guys, you know, or Frank Sinatra. That's great.
A
you
guy
know,
in a band.
Love, yeah.
You want to be a guy
I'm
in a band.
Guy in a band.
Yeah.
Well, the Travoltas opened up. I have so much fun, so much more fun now, infinitely more fun, not playing guitar and just singing and hamming it up with Paul in the Travoltas. Like I couldn't ever imagine walking away from that. And then now, I feel that coming back into my solo thing where I just. Like last night on 1978, we snapped our fingers and sang 1978 a cappella, and I You know,
that's like, awesome.
And it's like, those are things that I wouldn't have done 10 years ago because I'd be like, yeah. I'm the guy, I'm chained to my guitar and I'm never leave the mic. You know?
Right.
And I'm just really enjoying like this continuing to like, push out of whatever all of these, my own ideas of what music should be and like just keep experiencing different things. And like, and I feel like it's all fun. Like it's fun and different and just moving down the line, you know?
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Don't you feel like as we get older too, I like having this conversation with someone that's in the same age bracket.
Yeah. 'Cause
you can be like, as you know, there are things that we go through that I'd never fathomed when I was 25 or even, you know, even 30, like, you know, that I would be going through now. But I'm noticing and seeing it in my friends that I think are great musicians, and that it's almost like a soup or a chili, like you really get a lot more flavor as you don't really lose anything.
Yeah.
You lose angst. And
I haven't lost any angst.
No.
I'm very angsty.
I guess
I'll throw in there though, not necessarily, like, I think that like there's an earnest angst to youth that is a little disturbing to me. Like, I think that, like, I think what I really enjoy now is to be, I still feel those kind of things, but like to not take it so seriously anymore. Like, right. Not to where it's like,
yeah,
life or death, my playing my Stradivarius, you know, my self pity violin, you know, to really, experience it in a different space, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's also where, like, you know, like the Travoltas have a lot of pretty messed up songs about, you know, angsty things, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's like where maybe I see in younger bands this earnestness. And then we were all there. I was in the Moon Festival. I mean, God knows, we were the most over earnest band on the freaking planet. I mean, Fog Machines, and we thought we were, you know, we're badass. We're so earnest, and we're, you know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
we I feel like I got that later. I started off so goofy. I think all my bands.
Oh, yeah.
Until I was in my late 20s, all could have had Saturday morning cartoons.
Mm. Yeah.
But they would have been X-rated or R-rated at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Yeah. So you got this tour. Do you have any records you're doing coming up with anyone?
Not really. I'm available. So if anybody, you know, listening, has a good band, they need a producer.
Yeah.
I'm very available right now. And, I'm trying to figure out a way with little money to like get the Travoltas record finished and out, and then my solo record. And then I'm actually in a duo called The Disappearing Act with a guy I grew up with in El Paso. And we released our first CD a couple of years ago, and now the follow-up is ready. And
man, you got a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so that's coming out soon too. But luckily, he's funding that. So that's good. I'm off the hook on that one.
There's someone I knew that was doing a duo like that. I saw Kirk Tatum, you know him?
Uh-huh, no, I don't. Oh. Yeah.
He's from up there. He was in Deep Blue Something.
Oh, well, I know.
And he's in a band with the dude from the Grand Street Criers.
Okay. Tim Locke?
No, not Tim.
Oh.
Long-haired guy. No, he's not a long-haired guy.
Huh.
He's another guy. I know his name. I'm just drawing a blank on it. Well, I love Tim. What's he up to? Have you seen
him? Well, he's in Calhoun. I talked to
him. They're still playing?
Yeah, and he's making babies.
He
stuff,
is?
Which is good. I think they just had their second child, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's his wife's name?
I don't remember.
She's a great. Sorry. She's really nice. I stayed with them a few times when me and him did a bunch of stuff like 12 or 13 years ago together.
Well, he's amazing. He's amazing guy, just still plugging away, hanging in there.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like him.
Yeah.
And I like you, Salim Nirala. Well,
thanks.
Yeah.
I like you, Johnny Gowdy.
Thank you. I'm glad that we got to sit down and talk like
finally.
This. I feel like today in my podcast, I ended up making some friends.
Yeah. Well,
which is good.
I feel the same way.
Yeah.
So thanks a lot for having me over.
Have fun on this tour. And people can find out your stuff. Where's it? SalimNirala.com.
Right? Yeah, the hardest part of that is just spelling my name.
N-O-U-R-R.
No, only one R.
One R.
Yeah.
Allah.
Yes.
Yeah, two L's. I knew that. Okay. Yes. Salim Nirala.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming. Is there anything I'm missing?
I don't think so. Right. Just thanks again, John.
Yeah, I'll touch base with you about doing a show in July or August.
Okay. Right. I'm in.
All right. The only thing gone wrong is you're frozen stiff by the realization that you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. Salim Nirala with the realization that you don't know what you're doing. One of the great realizations and most frightening realizations of life. But at some point you do come across it and it's kind of a relief because you realize that you're not just the only person that doesn't know what they're doing. No one does. Salim Nirala, people, I like that guy a lot and I think he does know what he's doing. So maybe he's got the key. Get out there and check out his music, man. He's got some great music. Hopefully he'll have some new music coming down the pipe for us, his fans who love him. And look for us doing a show in July or August at Strange Brew because I really do like that guy. I love his music. I think our music goes well together, hand in hand. All right, get out there. Check out Salim. Great guy, great artist, great producer. Congratulations to him on producing the highest charting Old 97s album yet, all right? So, hey, while you're out there on the internet checking out Salim's music, be sure you go to How Did I Get Here, like our Facebook page, and follow me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm at Johnny Gowdy. Don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast and get it every Tuesday and Friday in your in your iTunes if you go to iTunes and subscribe on How Did I Get Here. Okay? Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Salim Nirala. How about some more Salim Nirala music? Let's hear it and let's get down. Bye-bye. It's such a beautiful day. Why am I so far away? I wanna be here now. Hundreds of thoughts fill my head, but I'd rather hear yours instead. I wanna be. Always caught up in the doing, always the pushing and pulling. I wanna give in to the moment of my choosing, swarming like flies all around. Nothing can drown out their sound. I wanna be here now. To pay close attention to you and only do what you want to. In the doing, always the pushing and pulling. I wanna give in to the moment of my choosing. Instead, I wanna.